Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Casterbrus podcast. Yes, with a K. Available on Casterbrus.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boo. It all started as a mild curiosity by these Casterbrites, and now it's turned into quite a spirit of adventure, don't you think? Listen!
My name's Christian Corley, and with me are James McLean and Brian Terranova.
Yep.
Hello.
Yeah, they're happy.
Yeah.
And also, we've got John Giler with us this week. Hi, John.
Hi! See what I did? I overcompensated.
Someone needs to.
We do actually have a fifth guest as well.
Oh, it's not.
A returning guest.
No.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. Salt and vinegar this week. I was trying to think of ways to get around the fact of sort of promoting, Jacob's products, which seems a little unfair. So I was either thinking of being really geeky and calling them oodities, or Disney, it's more like me and calling them sodities, which I think sort of has a almost like Greek sound to it. But yeah, they're here along for the ride as well. Whether they will speak or mutter, I don't know.
No, they can stay silent, can't they? Really?
Oh, can they? I think you'll find that they're open for debate on that. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so they are making quite a sound, aren't they, actually?
They are.
We've got the full gamut of social classes in the UK with us today. two working class northerners and a posh boy.
Who's the posh boy?
It's James.
I just couldn't work it out. I knew it wasn't me.
yes, indeed. So when Brian says something amusing, James, I beg your pardon, John, you and I should applaud, and of course James can rattle his oddities.
Right, that's fine.
Nice.
What's your middle name, John?
Mine.
Yeah.
Damn. You would ask, wouldn't you? You would.
It's
Philip.
Oh,
I know, it's a tough one.
I was hoping for something like Bernard or
well, I'd prefer Bernard. I was going to say Philip's quite a wet name, but then I'm going to upset all the Philips in the world now, aren't I?
Yeah.
So I retract that.
Well, Philip Morris is called Philip.
I was thinking
behind the missing episodes, uncovering projects, yes. And he's certainly a very determined character, isn't he? So
not anymore. He's heard that, and he's just think right.
Yes, I'm wet. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Sodity.
Yeah, sodity. Yes, he's a bit of a sodity. Yes.
I was just thinking, because you could introduce him as John Beguiler.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
That would be good, wouldn't it? It'd be like James Bond.
Yeah.
Hi.
Yeah.
My name's John. John Beguiler, and they go Beguiler, and you go yes. You want to look in my pants, and it goes on from there. Well, that's what I do.
That's what I say anyway.
yes.
But I haven't been using the beguiler bit, that's all.
What does the B stand for then, Philip? That's a shame. It's a bit of a wet name, that.
It intrigues them, you see. They want to find out more. So, yeah, it works every time.
It's lovely to have you back, John, and it's okay having you here, Brian.
It's lovely to speak to posh boy as well. I like it's nice to be allowed.
Drinking my highly refined coffee with my high-class crisps. They're not crisps. Crisps, that's for the working class. These are baked things. I don't know what they are. Baked crispy snaped snaps.
Well, let's face it, you don't need snacks. To know what they are, do you? As long as your butler knows what they are.
That's exactly it, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay.
Go to war, you don't need to know who the enemy is. You just let the butler do it.
Went all Peter Davison there, didn't I?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Can I be Adric then? Why is he never around when you want him? There you go.
So we're here this week to talk about Into the Dalek.
Up the Dalek, as I call it, because I'm from Yorkshire. Rate up it.
The most recent episode of Doctor Who Series 8, in which the Doctor and Clara entered a Dalek in a completely non-sexual way.
Boo.
Have you not seen it?
I've not seen the porn version, no.
Oh, right, okay. There's a porn version of Doctor Who going around, isn't there?
I know.
Yeah, we probably shouldn't talk about that because we've got lots of children who listen.
Oh,
right, okay.
I'm making that up. I have no idea who listened to it.
Well, there will be, and you did start it. You were the one who mentioned it.
You did, actually.
And it was you.
That started what?
The talking about the... Yeah.
Oh, right, yes, me. Yes. Sorry, yeah.
Back up the Dalek.
Yes, and up the Dalek is next. And
with Sid James.
And okay, let's try and get through it.
let's try and get through it. I've got to go now. Now, manager.
That car's going past again with
Have you seen some of the names of some of the characters in the porn version? You see that they're battling the cyber seamen.
No,
which I thought was quite.
They are not. Seriously.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to ask which one are you talking about? Because aren't there two? There's Dr. Screw, isn't there?
Yeah.
Is that the one you're talking about?
I'm talking about the Doctor Hall one, I think, I believe it's called.
Oh, that's that. I don't know about that one.
That's the brand new one, I think. Wow. That's it's very exciting for people who just love double entendres and genitals.
Cyber semen. That reminds me of the old when Naeem played when Zaragoza played Arsenal, and Naeem scored this goal from the halfway line about 20 years ago. And the commentary shout, Naeem lobs semen from halfway line.
Yeah, you could see that coming. Yeah, oh, God, yeah. Oh. You could see that coming. That was totally unintentional. The other name I remember from it is one that I quite liked was River Dong.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. I think that figurative...
Nothing but class here, you know?
I know, isn't it? It's just top-notch. We're on a roll today.
Yeah, so, Into the Dalek. Where do we start with Into the Dalek? It's got a really good guest cast, I thought. It was compact, but you had the girl whose name I have a bit of problem with pronouncing. Does anyone want to help me out with this?
Clara.
Which one?
Clara.
No, not Clara. No. The girl who played Journey Blue.
Oh, I wouldn't know the actress's name, but
it's spelled Zawe. So is that Zaw or Zawe?
Let's just call her Zor.
Zor.
It sounds great.
It does, yeah. Zor Ashton. I thought she was really good.
Yeah, I did.
She was, yeah.
Yeah, she was quite good. And then you got Michael Smiley, who played Colonel Blood. Do you know Michael?
I used to work on Wire in the Blood as a featured extra in the background.
Right.
And he was the pathologist on Wire in the Blood. And I used to spend most of my time in between takes with him, having a laugh with him. So I don't know him, no.
Right.
But we
You've
had
encountered you know, him.
I've encountered him on a few occasions. And we had a great time. Yeah, he's a great bloke. It's very funny.
Is his last name actually Smiley?
It is.
Yes.
Wow, is he related to Guy Smiley?
I don't know. Or Carol. I don't know.
I'm not quite sure how you can mock last names with a name like Terra Nova.
Hey, what is wrong with Terra Nova?
The best name going.
It's a pretty unusual name, isn't it?
Brian's one of the few people who's got the same name as the Doctor Who episode.
But it's not the last name of a Muppet.
You're calling him a Muppet?
Guy Smiley is a Muppet. What do you want?
Which one is he?
He's the one that does the news.
He did the news.
Oh, so he's a Sesame Street Muppet, isn't he?
Yes.
See, yeah. I wasn't allowed to watch Sesame Street.
Why not?
Really? Why, was it scary?
No, because it was American.
Get out.
Yeah, and they said things like Z. And my mum didn't want me saying Z. She wanted me saying Z, so I wasn't allowed to watch Sesame Street.
Oh, no, there's some actual merit there, I get that.
It's horrendous, isn't it?
Ah, shocking.
I know, it's the sort of thing you'd expect James to say.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, we weren't allowed either. I mean, Papa had me wired up to an electrolysis sort of machine. So whenever it came on and it said Z, it used to electrocute me to make sure that I'd always say Z.
Right.
But you called him Papa?
I called him Papa, yeah. Well,
isn't that an Americanism? No, am I missing something?
No, Papa is actually...
It's European, isn't it? Germans.
Absolutely.
Oh, is it? Right, well, there you go. There's a hole in my knowledge.
What I actually thought James was going to say was that his father wired him up to some sort of machine, Joe 90 style, is what I thought he was going to say.
That's what I hoped he was going to say.
I could have, I suppose. But yeah. I didn't, did I? So
send you out to do missions that were far too dangerous and quite frankly irresponsible.
Let's face it, we're all wired up to some kind of machine these days. So.
Joe 90 was an annoying show. It was one of those shows that tried to perpetuate this myth that people who looked really geeky and annoying were actually quite cool, and they weren't.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Hi, I'm the Milky Bar Kid. That was a desperate one as well, wasn't it? You know, that advert with the little geeky, I mean, Milky Bar kids would be on him because they'd just kick the hell out of him until they took them all from him. You know, it's you can't get away from social order like that. There are rules, there's hierarchy. Are we meant to be talking about a show? What's
yeah.
show? What's
up the show? Dalek. Up the Dalek. Dalek one. Yeah. 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 Absolutely. Let's get on with it.
Up the Dalek with Frankie Howard.
Yes. Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Up the Dalek. That'd have been a brilliant title.
This is the way this podcast has gone so far, it's almost as if John provided me with a list of voices he can do.
Yes. And then I can't do any voices.
And then we're just throwing them in there. But this absolutely has not happened. Into the Dalek, by Phil Ford and Stephen Moffat, directed by Ben Wheatley, who I have to say, although I did enjoy Deep Breath, I think the direction was a lot tighter in Into the Dalek.
Absolutely.
And also gave us the introduction of Samuel Anderson as Danny Pink, which I thought, I'll give you guys a chance to talk about this in a moment and give me your feedback. I thought the section with him, it was really good, but it kind of felt as though, not tacked on, but it just... It stopped the pace of the episode until the Doctor pops up in the store cupboard. What do you think of that? Did it jar for you? Or not, maybe jar's not the right word, but just it sort of like takes you out of it a minute.
You know, I don't think that scene took me out of it because, you know, we had to get Clara's perspective of what she was doing since she wasn't with the Doctor. So it kind of made sense to pick up with her and what's been going on in her world. The scene that more so took me out of it, since we're talking about scenes taking us out of it, was the Missy scene.
Mm-hmm.
I felt, you know, Moff's story arcs just don't work for me because they're always like plugged into the episodes in some way that just are not right, and then they have a very poor payoff. So this episode, while I do have some minor issues with it, I thought it was a very good episode overall. But that scene, when that scene happened, I was just kind of like, you know, like everything was going so well, and then this one moment that wasn't necessary, it was there. But I didn't mind Danny Pink's scene. I thought they were okay.
Can I say I actually dislike this episode?
Really? Okay.
Yeah. You know what? Damn it. Yeah. That's a shame. I was going to say to John, Christian is going to be the one who was the voice of the episode, why he liked it. I was going to say I liked it, but had some minor qualms. And I was going to say that James was the one who didn't like it. And I'm so mad I didn't now because I was so damn right. But anyway, James,
well, yeah, afraid so.
Okay, go on then, hit us.
I think I've been racking my brains over this over the last day or so, because as I've said before, no one wants to dislike an episode, and I don't think it was intrinsically bad, but I just, for me personally, there was just stuff in it which meant that it just didn't work. And I think the Danny Pink thing was a really bad move on both Brian and Christian's point. Brian's point, I would link it to the Missy stuff in the sense that it's again pushing arcs in a show which doesn't have time to do arcs, and the Danny Pink arc to me just feels too superfluous. For me, the show felt like it started in the teaser and then had to do the Danny Pink thing and then had to restart again. So you felt like you were just going back. And I just watched it. I was thinking this would be such a tighter story if they didn't have the Danny Pink stuff. Clara had been on the ship at the TARDIS in the first place. They'd landed on the ship. They'd had 10 minutes then to actually expose us to some of the characters, especially the ones who are going to die. So when they actually died, there was some feeling of connection. I didn't feel any connection to anyone. When the Daleks started bursting into the station, I didn't care because I didn't know any of the characters. It was boring. I was watching Daleks again shooting people. I was like, I've got no connection to anyone here. And that 10 minutes or so, or 8 minutes with Danny, that's a lot of character time you could have used within the episode, which again goes back to what they did in the last episode of the dinosaur, and kind of feeling that you're inserting these things in a format which just doesn't have the space. So that was my... I mean, there was a few other quibbles I had in it that I didn't think worked. I didn't think locking Capaldi in front of the camera for the Dalek sequence at the end in the final act, I felt that didn't work in itself. There were small, odd things which felt like Rose. It looked almost to me like when Clara was going up the rope, she was enjoying it after someone had just sacrificed their life. Now, again, I don't know if that was just bad direction or bad editing where she was screaming out of shock, but it looked like she was laughing. And I was thinking that jars with me badly. And I felt it jarred as well with the previous episode. I thought the ending of the episode was quite interesting, the end of the last one, where it was sort of inferring these two new characters who were not romantically linked, but obviously had a lot to learn about each other, were moving in a positive step. In the next episode, we have the same as they seem to always do. Oh yeah, he went off anyway and left her there. And while it's a funny gag, it just, again, it doesn't pay off. So yeah, there was just loads of things I didn't like. And I didn't think there was any point to the Danny Pink thing because she didn't know it. She was going to go out with him, regardless of whether he was a soldier or not. If she had said in that piece that she wasn't interested in going out with him because he was a soldier, then at the end was interested because she began to understand soldiers, that would have been different. So that didn't work for me either. And there's other things, but I've talked too long. So yes, I had issues, obviously. Okay. I thought Capaldi was good, though.
Capaldi was really, really quite good in that. John,
yes.
Guyler, how much do you enjoy Into the Dalek?
I thought it was absolutely wonderful from beginning to end. Before I start my speech, as it were, not that I have a speech prepared or anything, but I'm in a difficult situation in that a lot of people may criticise me for saying, well, he's only trying to get another part in Doctor Who by arse-licking. But, you know, whilst that is kind of 30% true. No, in all honesty, I mean, I've gone on record in the past, even before my involvement with the show, that I am quite a supporter of Stephen Moffat's work. And, you know, everything has issues. But for me, I think on Saturday, the kind of mood I was in was I'd done some work that day. I'd done my day, as it were. I hadn't thought about Doctor Who at all. In fact, I had a panic at 6 o'clock. What time is it on? I may have missed it. I think that that kind of lent some excitement to the whole thing in itself, the fact that I thought I'd missed it and then realised I hadn't, you know. In fact, I think it was you, Christine, who told me what time it was on. But anyway, I'm babbling. But, so it was very much the fish fingers thing for me that night, because I got myself a pizza and a couple of cans of Guinness and sat down and watched it under those conditions rather than overthinking it, just to kind of as a casual viewer, which is something that I didn't used to do. Obviously, I used to sit there, you know, really, really uptight, you know, what's it going to be like today? What's it going to be like today? You know, whereas I think on Saturday, as I say, I approached it as a casual viewer and thoroughly enjoyed it as a result. I loved the Danny Pink sequences. I didn't think it took me out of it at all. It simply didn't occur to me. I thought they were beautifully done. I thought Jenna Coleman is just getting better and better and better. She really is. She is. She's absolutely phenomenal. And I will stick my neck out and say she's the best actress to have been in the show since Louise Jameson. In terms of a companion.
Yeah.
I think she's absolutely incredible. And the Missy thing didn't take me out of it either. It simply intrigued me. But again, they've chosen an actress that I admire, Michelle Gomez, anyway. And so I was just more interested in looking at her and what she's doing with it. And it just, I like being taken out of things momentarily and then put back in. In terms of drama, I actually enjoy that.
Do you think, though... Do you think it's a bit of a bygone practice, or is it simply, I don't know whether this is with Brian, but for me, one of the reasons I didn't like the Missy thing is that every time that we've had one of these mysterious arcs in Doctor Who's position, I don't want to have to say since Moffat came on, I think there was a couple with Davis as well, they've never paid off for me. I've never felt that was well worth it.
I can see that point. I mean, before story arcs became prevalent, it was Key to Time that started all of this, wasn't it? But I've never been a massive fan of story arcs, I'll be honest. I think you're right. I don't think they have a great deal of time to deal with that, and I think that it can alienate certain viewers. And I much prefer self-contained stories, but things have changed, so I simply have to accept that that's part of it. I simply have to accept that. And I know why they're there. And I think that, I think some of the payoffs, yeah, great. Some, no. I think it's a matter of taste. I think I wouldn't say all of the payoffs have been disappointing at all, but some have, yeah. I think you're going to get that anyway, aren't you, with story arcs? Because it creates it whips people up into such a frenzy. And when they don't get what they want, they're disappointed, and I think that's the issue with story arcs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because it whips people up too much.
Well, it's easy to pose an interesting question. It's very hard to pose an interesting answer in return. That's the problem. It's just, and that's no matter how good a writer you are, that's
absolutely.
Well, it depends on the type of art, doesn't it? I mean, I think John, you said Key to Time, but I think really the first, probably the most recognisable early story arc in Doctor Who is the whole Metabolis thing with the Third Doctor, isn't it?
You could say that, yeah.
Oh, you could even go back further and go with the master plan, because you even have a prologue.
Yeah,
yes,
indeed.
Yes, you could.
So I think it depends on the type of arc and what type of story you're telling with that arc that determines whether or not answer is going to meet the question.
I suppose the problem is that we're not dealing with an arc in any of those versions, because in all those versions, the key to time was the actual central ethos, the actual main story of the episode was almost like the B thing. The whole point was meant to be the key to time, and the same with Dalek Master Plan. With here, the whole point of the episode, I suppose, is being shunted a little to the side of something else. And I must admit, that doesn't bother me as much. I found the Danny Pink thing more... I think there's two things. The two things I think really stood out that got me. With the Danny Pink thing is it did to me the cardinal... It broke the cardinal rule in any television. And that is that you don't try and force relationships within 4 minutes. You know, how many pilots do you see trying to do this, where they try and set up who the lead, will they, won't they characters be to sort of, you know, to set the show up, when romances are far more, because we're very paternal as viewers, I think. And we value the characters as if they're our sons and daughters. And when a new character comes up and within 4 minutes, then, you know, they're inadvertently or the moves are being made, you're all sort of thinking, you know, I'm not sure yet if you're worthy of this character. You know, are you sure that, you know, I was like this with River Song, I must admit, with the Doctor. You know, it's like, you know, automatically we're meant to assume that you're lovers. I need to size you up. I need to know what you like. I need to know what you like at the table. And, you know, whether you'll come and help me clean the dishes after, before I let you date my daughter or my son. There's that sort of feeling. So when it pushes it in 4 minutes, I feel sort of slightly like, I don't know who you are.
Oh, you were right, Christian. He is a posh boy, isn't he? I want to know what your manners are like at the table.
Exactly. The colour aside, I think we are a bit like that, because
I'm from the north. People have sex before they know each other's names. You know, so therefore, Into the Dalek was a kind of a long courtship, 4 minutes, a long time.
But I think that I felt that sort of was slightly intrusive, when I was really more interested in how Clara was interacting with this new doctor. To me, that was what the last episode paid off at the end, and I was more interested in that. So when Danny comes along, who's quite a nicely realized character, and he was well acted, no problems with that at all.
Absolutely.
I just felt sometimes I think shows are just too quick to try and establish stuff, where if you play things on the long run, which is why I think Ian Barbara has worked for people so much, is that, well, there was never anything specified there, but because there was a gradual build up in the friendship, it became something that people embraced. And I think that works better. And
although when the missing episode of The Romans turns up, episode 5, and you see what they got up to, that'll be interesting, won't it?
But I did have a little problem with that. My only other thing I'll throw in here, which I think, see what Brian thinks about this, because he's been so silent, is the video game factor to it. I did really balk at the video game factor. Miniaturization stories are very hard in themselves, because they're quite hard to swallow, in the sense that they're fairly ludicrous. But they could be very easy to swallow, I suppose, if they're so small. But I know. But I do find that sometimes that can sort of break down the believability factor. You know, you're suddenly going into a Dalek, and fortunately, all the Dalek conduits are wide enough for people to walk down, and there's, you know, convenient bolt holes where there's things you can walk through. And the whole idea that if you miniaturize people to go into something, that's going to make it easier to sort something out, because, you know, people are built for a certain, I'm not going to talk about the gravity in the sense that you couldn't do it, but in the sense that we've got two arms and, you know, we've got two legs. If you miniaturize someone to actually deal with something on such a microscopic level, being the same sort of body is not going to help, really. I mean, they had guns in there and a sonic screwdriver. They could do no more there than they could in the real world. So again, it starts to feel a bit childish and video game-ish, because it's the sort of thing you would do in a video game, especially when you're going into the neural pathways and finding a button to switch on different memories. You think, well, what's that really about? Does that really work?
Really overthought this.
Yeah,
these are things that were going through my head as I was watching it. And I was thinking,
he's got a. Yeah, I'm sorry, James. Go on.
No, sorry, that I spoke. I spoketh too much.
I was going to say you have a good point, because one of the things that actually did bug me was that Clara was just able to go press some buttons. That who would be able to press those buttons if Clara wasn't miniaturized to press them in the first place? Like, they should have had some other kind of way, like maybe crossed wires or some other kind of method, somehow figure something
they could,
out by
they could.
By accident.
Now you say that, they could have done a kind of reverse have I the right sort of scenario there.
Seriously, yeah. Yeah, and I don't mind them being miniaturized and going in the Dalek. You know, I don't. You know, it is an interesting concept, but I agree again with what you're saying that there's just corridors built for them to walk around in and so on, and it looks like almost the inside of a Dalek is a spaceship for a miniaturized person to one day walk around. You know, and you kind of got that as well with Carnival of Monsters when Pertwee and Joe were going around that ship. Now, they tried to make it look more like machinery and circuitry, but naturally they built walkways and doorways and so on for them to go through. You're going to have things like that for your actors to walk around in. I think that the times where it started to kind of fall apart for me, I have to agree, was kind of when the camera was pointing on Capaldi for his scene with the Dalek, because it was very much, you could easily tell he was on a green screen there. That's when the set did go away, and it kind of did bug me that there was a big disconnect between set and green screen, which you don't necessarily get that much anymore in the show. Similar things like that were bugging me as they were going through the whole kind of situation. I mean, other things too, I guess not even taking the video game scenario anymore, but there were certain aspects that bugged me that were just kind of done before, such as in Matt Smith's second episode, both he and Karen happen to fall down a great big slide that drops them into a big glop of goo. Mm. And here we get the same exact thing in this episode. In Let's Kill Hitler, Amy and Rory end up inside the Tesselecta, which is, again, a big human-shaped spaceship. So they're shrunk to fit inside the spaceship that has antibody robots to fight them. And obviously we saw antibodies before with Tom Baker when they did their The Fantastic Voyage storyline before. I mean, and this is just a few. Like these are my issues with that. Now, I do want to say, before I get too far in bashing it, I did actually really enjoy the episode, and I know I'll rewatch it again many times, I think, because it was fun and told well, and which is something I have not done for any of the Smith era, bar like very few stories. So I'm very excited to actually feel this way again, that I enjoyed it and I can watch it again over and over. But you know, there were just so many things that were borrowed once again. I mean, you have Danny, who, you know, I liked him. I liked his scenes. I didn't mind them at all. But the fact that, you know, when you bring in an aspect that he was in war and possibly killed soldiers in war, that's, you know, a soldier. That's what they do. But when you have that kid ask him if he ever killed anybody outside of war, and then you have that aspect that he may have done this thing, well, we're just trotting down River Song's territory again with who did she kill? You know, so we've already been there with a companion. Somebody's already killed somebody. Having the Dalek once again tell the Doctor you would be a good Dalek, or whatever variant was on that. We didn't quite need that again. It worked so well in Eccleston's era. It's kind of like going back to Tennant's first proper episode, when he says he has his Everybody Lives moment, because Russell wanted an Everybody Lives moment for Tennant. You know, we didn't really need that over and over again. Gun Girl's goodbye to the uncle character was very Rose to Mickey from the first episode. The setup of the story too, it's very Dalek in nature. It's you know, a Dalek hidden in a closet that has something wrong with it, and then, you know, it gets morality by the end. Of course, it's a skewed morality, but it's there.
Well, Doctor Who's always been very self-referential of itself. I think I can't think of any Doctor Who episode that doesn't have elements of other Doctor Who episodes, except perhaps, and I'm talking outside here because you've obviously got scares and things like that. Blink's the only one I can think of that doesn't really, and even then, you know, you've got the story from the annual that it's based on anyway. So, you know, this thing happens, and it happens with fiction. And when you've got something that's long running like Doctor Who, it's going to be referring back to itself quite often.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between trotting on your own territory and referring back to itself and kind of doing directly things that were done before. You know, I mean, like even down to in the Moffat era, Matt Smith's second episode and now Peter Capaldi's second episode, they fall down a great big slide into a glop of goo. I mean, like it's like Moffat's just doing his stuff, you know, and other people's stuff. And just over again, like exact, like there's no variation to it, almost is how it seems. And that, like, I guess my issue with it more so is if I watch an episode and there's something that gives me like one of those, oh, that's neat, that's kind of reminiscent kind of feeling, that's okay, because you may not pick up it on the first time or second time, whatever. But if you're watching and you're directly sitting there going, you would be a good Dalek, like, wow,
Do you think there's possibly a problem that we're just getting too old, in the sense that, yes, you know, if we go back to John's point of view, the fact that the casual viewer probably won't necessarily remember that. I mean, I agree with everything you said, Brian, that there's I mean, one of the problems I had a little was the good Dalek thing. Is like, you know, how many times have we had this sort of good Dalek storyline? It feels a bit echoey, and as you say, Dalek with it being locked up. But then, you know, is that because we've watched the show so much that it?
2005 was 9 years ago.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. It feels very
more
recent.
Also,
don't forget how many times Terry Nation sold the same story to the BBC, but exactly the same story, and so it's nothing. This is nothing new, you know. It didn't feel like that to me, though, to be quite honest with you. Although obviously, my brain was, oh yeah, he said that in 2005. Oh yeah, that was mentioned in 2008. But it didn't feel like simply a kind of Frankenstein kind of composite, as you're suggesting, of bits that have happened before. It didn't feel like that to me.
Sorry, something in my throat there. I was thinking, when you said it didn't feel like a composite and a Frankenstein composite, and, you know, something that I think does is Attack of the Cybermen. And I think the era of Doctor Who that we're having at the moment is in complete contrast. I think it's far superior. I just want to go back to Danny Pink. It's an interesting bit. When he was approached in the staff room by the head teacher to say, you haven't met Clara, or... to Clara said, you haven't met Danny, I can't remember quite how it went. Those three people all appeared in Emmerdale at exactly the same time.
Wow. There's got to be something in that.
All three actors, yeah.
Yeah.
I've just looked that up while someone was giving a speech. I quickly looked that up.
How different do you think it... Because I think one of the other problems... I'm saying problems, I'm talking very lightly. I don't mean they're serious problems. One of the things which I remember... We talked about in previous podcasts was this feeling, this notion that it was going to be a very different show.
Mm-hmm.
Does it, in a sense, it feels a different show. I mean, the talk of the pacing does seem maybe a little slower, maybe.
Yeah.
Do you feel, I mean, there's a lot of things I am still a little disappointed they've kept, like, you know, like I've just said, going back and forth to the contemporary zone,
mm-hmm.
You know, with the TARDIS being fully under control. Sort of things like that. I was kind of hoping, and that's probably a bad thing, because as soon as you hope, you expect, and when you don't get, you feel slightly peeved by
yes.
it. Do you think it should have been a little more different, little more changes to format? Do you think that's as Brian says, is there too many sort of things that are...
Well, I wonder whether Danny, the method of Danny's introduction is to take Clara out of the TARDIS completely.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
So it could be more of a slower plan to sort of change the show a bit, and it would be might be different again next year. I think it is noticeably different. I think I'm talking purely theoretically here, because I haven't done any practical directing for about 20 years. But from a theoretical point of view, if you've got an actor like Matt Smith who moves around a lot, then there's an argument that the editing needs to be quite quick as well. Whereas you've got Peter Capaldi who's... In contrast, and I've noticed this mentioned in a review somewhere, Peter Capaldi's stillness, and maybe it was you said it as well, James, I can't quite recall, but the way he moves is a lot, is fast, more reserved in his motion, which is quite a contrast with Matt Smith, and I think it works really well, and I think a reaction to that, or an impact of that, is that the editing then slows down and the scenes are longer. I've got no problem with longer scenes in Doctor Who. I've been calling out for them for years. In the Seventh Doctor era, particularly the second two series, things did move quite quickly, a lot quicker than probably 95% of what else was on television. And the other things were the kind of the... Do you remember the old youth programming on BBC Two? Like Def 2. That was it, Def 2. Yeah, and stuff like that. So I think... And Doctor was very different then, and it was different from anything else. And I think it still is, but it's going in kind of maybe going in a slightly different direction with that difference now. It has to be visually unique, doesn't it? Because it has to be its own thing completely, and it's doing so well around the world that it has to have that uniqueness to it, I think.
I definitely agree. It's definitely a different feel. I think with the exception of the dinosaur and Vastra and crew, it's been less kind of outrageous or less silly. It's definitely taken a step for me I don't want to say like how everybody's been saying it's going to be darker and scary or whatever. It just seems a little bit more of a serious tone while the fun is still there. And I like that. So yeah, these last two episodes, as much as like I've nitpicked those minor things that I saw, they've been a treat for me. I've really enjoyed them. Like I felt like a kid again, enjoying my favorite show. So whatever they've done, whatever the change, be it the actor or an overall change, it's been massive to me. Like, I've been loving Capaldi and I've been loving the tone of the episodes. Like I said, I particularly really enjoyed this one while I was watching it. And I've been wanting to watch it a second time, but my girlfriend's going to be here in like another day and I'm waiting to watch it with her, but I really kind of just want to keep watching it. But I want it to feel fresh again when I watch it with her, you know, mm-hmm. but like, it was so fun to do. It was so fun to watch. So I'm curious to see these little gripes that I had, if they're going to feel that apparent to me, because obviously they've been apparent in Doctor Who before, like you said. So I'm wondering if I'm just going to look at it again and just take the adventure for what it is, take the direction for what it was, and certainly the actors, because they were really all fun. And I was surprised to actually find Danny so interesting from the off. I really thought that we were going to get 2 seconds with him that was kind of like, okay, well, we need a little bit more, please. But no, it was actually quite good, I thought. So yeah, I think it's taken a really nice direction. Whatever the change is, whatever pinpoint I can't put my words on, it's definitely taken my mind away, you know, back to being a fan again.
Okay, well, that's good, at least. Listen, we had a look at Missy on Casterbus last week and looked at some of the different theories. I'm just going to read them out. She might be a female version of the Master.
Yes.
She could be the Rani, which I particularly like. She could be River Song, again, in a different form. She could be Missy, not his other half, but his other half, a kind of a Dream Lord style version of the Doctor. She could be created in the Cybersphere. It wasn't called Cybersphere, was it? The Cybermen's Cyberiad, that she discovered in Nightmare in Silver. There are other theories going around. John, have you got any theories?
Well, my favourite is the Master, because I think that we're talking about story arcs and payoffs. That would be the ultimate payoff for me. And I tell you, it would be a very something that I get fed up of year in, year out is, oh, is the next Doctor going to be a woman? And I really do think that it would be nice to wrong foot people and say, no, but the Master is, you know. Mm-hmm. I really like that idea. And also, simply because I'm very aware of that particular actress's abilities, if that was the case, wow, you know, there'd be some amazing, especially opposite Capaldi. That would be an incredible dynamic. I hope it's the Master.
Okay. James, do you have any favoured theory on Missy's identity?
I don't.
Oh, hello.
Okay, what about you, Brian?
You know, I...
You see, he's been taken to heaven. He's with Missy now. That's what happened.
She was probably afraid of what he was going to say there.
He's having tea now, just a little splosh.
Hope his butler went too. That would be awful. Tea without the butler. Yeah, me. Sure. I think honestly, right now my favorite is kind of the Rani, because since we spoke last time, I was saying that I wasn't too keen on Missy's over the top performance of seeming like a crazy woman. But then I thought, if the Master fled the war, then what did the Rani do to get out of the war? How is she out here right now? So maybe whatever she did kind of made her a little crazy. And I would like to see, the main reason I would like to see her is because we haven't seen her since the 80s. We've seen the Master already a few times now in the new series. And I would like to see that, if it's going to be Time Lord related. If it's not going to be Time Lord related, my favorite theory is not really a theory in itself, and more so a wish that she is just something new and interesting that we can learn about, because, you know, it's great to have returning monsters and villains, but I would like to see something new. I would like to see something interesting. I'm concerned. You know, I trust your opinion, John, that she's got skills. But right now, from what we've seen so far, I'd feel like she's that typical cookie cutter crazy villain, and I'm worried about that, because I'm worried that that's going to get to the end and that's all she'll be.
There's a couple of other interesting theories. One is that she's the Time Lord Clara.
That's an interesting theory.
Clearly regenerated. And another one is
the TARDIS.
There's that whole arrangement of the TARDIS, and we talked about this last week, John. There's a couple of ornaments outside Mancini's restaurant in Deep Breath that aren't that different to the type of prop that we saw for the Rani's TARDIS back in the 80s. But there's another similarity is, and this might mean nothing, it might mean something, might mean nothing, is when the Doctor picked up Journey Blue when her spaceship exploded at the beginning of Into the Dalek, she was just there all of a sudden, which is the same way the people who end up in Missy's domain, we'll call it, they just end up there.
Oh, suddenly. So you're thinking Missy's So she, Heaven that, is her TARDIS?
Possibly, yes, possibly, yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and then you've got the arrangement of the TARDIS's exterior. Her room's exterior.
In the opening, we have Capaldi materialising the TARDIS around Soldier Blue, should we call her? As you just say. So, yeah, it would make sense, wouldn't it? It's a little hint there, isn't it, in the same episode. Yeah. Makes sense, yeah. Interesting.
Indeed. Now, we seem to have lost James briefly there. I don't know when he's going to be... Oh, hello. Hang on, it's the phone.
Ah.
He says it's the phone. I'll have to cut this bit out. I've got a question for you in a moment, John, which only you can answer.
He's
got ADSL, that's why. Right, he's ready. Where is he? Yes, add to group call. Here he comes. You're back.
Yeah.
How was your trip to heaven?
Oh, fucking annoying.
Was it? You don't like Michelle.
Did she go OTT, did she?
Yeah, she did.
Sploosh. Oh, it was a sploosh. So you went to the toilet while you were there. That's what you're saying, isn't it?
Well, maybe she did. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have a favourite theory for...
I quite like... I don't like, but the one that's sort of made a lot of sense of late, the two that I've heard. One is the whole idea that it's linked to Silence in the Library.
All right.
Which is now this series, this episode. I don't know. You've got,
we've got episode titles later on as well that also link to Silence in the Library, haven't we?
So there's that idea that this is the digital heaven, that they're being uploaded to that, which would be a bit of a callback to a story which was now a good 5-6 years ago, which is a long time to be calling back to stories. The other one that I've heard a few people say is that she's the TARDIS, who in the future is very pissed off with the Doctor, which is why the lover thing comes in. And I don't really like that either. I don't really know. I think I would... to be honest, I think I would prefer something straight and just go for something like the Rani or the Master, just because I think, as we said before, when you're trying to be too clever with your answer, if your question, it sometimes it just won't pay off. So maybe you can pay it off by doing something that people want.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, that's why if it is a returning character, I hope that it's the Master, because that would be the biggest payoff I can think of. Otherwise, I'm with Brian. Something new, please. One of the two for me, but I hope personally, I'm only speaking personally, I hope it's not the Rani. I really do.
Okay.
It depends on how they use her. If they actually try and... The show really does need a good antagonist, which isn't simply either something that's innate, universal, or something that is misguided or tragic. It'd be nice to have someone like the Rani, like Davros, someone who's actually got rationalized agendas, which while you might not agree with and might be considered evil, to them they are rational, they are logic, they are, because that can make some of the best antagonists. That's what I think would be nice. So the Rani, if the Rani's played right as an amoral scientist, that could be quite interesting for the show, because we haven't really had that. I mean, even Davros in Journey's End was a little bit mad. Didn't really see his rationale in just sort of destroying everything. He didn't quite seem to...
I hadn't noticed. Was he mad?
He seemed a little bonkers, didn't he?
Well, and that's the thing. They keep making all these returning villains, or at least many of the villains, just insane. But they're also making a big deal about in the show that the Doctor is a madman in a box. Well, that's not necessarily true. But with with the Rani, they are, or rather, if she came back, I would rather see her more like she was in Mark of the Rani at the time of the Rani. And I would like to see some kind of connection. Like, for instance, maybe this Dalek wasn't simply just damaged and that radiation leakage was affecting it just due to battle damage. Maybe the Rani is maybe the reason why Missy is in every step of the way is because her hand is in the pot in each one of these moments that the Doctor is going to. Maybe she had some kind of something to do with that Dalek having that radiation leakage, just simply to see how it would affect his mind, which would be the scientist aspect of the Rani, just doing these things for her own scientific curiosity or gains. But even if it's not the Rani, even if it's something new, I think that would at least be a little bit more interesting to explain why she's there, unless, the personal vendetta grudge obviously should just follow the Doctor. But I think that would be more interesting for me.
But the reason the Rani would be interesting is for the reason it shouldn't be the Rani. And that is that the Rani had absolutely, initially, zero interest in the Doctor at all. He was just someone who was just in the way, didn't he, twice, in the same way, Davros in Genesis, you know, he wasn't really interested in the Doctor at all, apart from his own agenda, you know, whoever was in his way, get out of the way, I've got my own rationale. And you've got, but already that would not be the case, because it seems she's focused on the Doctor. So if it,
yeah,
and that's a shame, because one thing which has obviously come up in the news as well, you know, in social media articles at least, is this whole thing that everything in Stephen Moffat's universe, and to be fair, in Little of Davis's as well, is totally Doctor-centric, be it companions, be it enemies, it's all about the Doctor. You know, Time of the Doctor is probably a fantastic example, where virtually the whole universe is about the Doctor. To have an enemy where he isn't the main thing, and he's just superfluous, or just in the way, or just slightly a pain, would be quite new for this series of things. I mean, a fresh thing.
And that kind of would be a good reason for it to not be the Rani.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly
like you're saying. And personally for me, even for it to not be the Master, especially since she's sitting there telling people that the Doctor is her boyfriend, you know, like, and to me, that's like, you know, obviously it's an insanity thing. Like, she's fixated on him in a stalkerish kind of way, which would be good for something new, rather for a character new. This way you'd see this something new relationship rather than have the Master come back, be a woman, and all of a sudden he's infatuated with the Doctor in that way. It would just be weird for me. But the Rani doesn't even make sense in that respect either. That's why something new still sits more with me.
Okay. Let us move on a little. There's a couple of things I want to talk about. First of all, there's been a few naysayer announcements in the press today. We're recording this on Monday, dear listener, that Doctor Who's overnights were only 5.2 million. And obviously, we would say, well, that's an overnight. That's not the finished title. That's not the finished total, big pun. And, you know, we've got BBC iPlayer. We've got Doctor Who's worldwide success, BBC America, other channels to consider there. So, you know, there's not a kind of... Doctor Who's not going to get axed because we've got 5.2 million episodes on an viewers on an overnight. It is low, but then again, it was quite a nice day on Saturday. You know, this feeds into my show, Doctor Who, when it's dark and dark nights and wintry outside, like it was when I was a little boy. Philosophy.
It's still got it didn't. Oh, no, that was Deep Breath, wasn't it? They got a third of the. I mean, that's more important. It's less how many millions, but it's obviously what proportion of the audience is watching.
Yeah, well, with Deep Breath, it was about 30%.
Yeah.
Which is massive, obviously. And we will see. I haven't checked, but it's probably about 30%. Oh, we've lost John now.
Oh dear.
And I was going to ask him a question specifically that only he could answer.
Oops.
That's a.
Well, we can hold out for a second. Surely he'll be back.
Yeah, I should think he will be.
You got any suggestions why suddenly my router would be affected by the phone?
No, is it ADSL?
Yeah.
Yeah, it used to happen to me. I think it's a knackered microfilter.
That was my wondering whether I need to get another DSL one out.
Yeah. That's the first thing I would try.
Yeah.
That's why I don't use ADSL anymore. It's too much of a piss about with the microfilters.
Well, I must admit, it's been the first time in years since it's happened, but it was just buggeringly annoying to work out that it was happening in the middle of a podcast.
Yes. Yes, I can imagine. I'll call him, see what happens. Did try that for you though as well, and nothing happened. How are we doing for time? Oh, we're okay.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Well, I enjoyed my trip. It was actually good for me, although she didn't have the kind of tea I wanted, but yeah, it was good.
Okay, good.
Yeah, and she says you're all wrong.
Nice.
Sorry.
What you do there is you leave me with the problems. Do I leave this whole missing John bit in and the missing James bit in now?
Oh, absolutely. I think you should.
I'm going to have to now, aren't I? Yeah, all right, well, John, last time you were with us, we spoke about your appearance in Doctor Who in The Day of the Doctor and also in Planet of Giants. And you also spoke about Doctor Omega.
Oh, yes.
Now, that's now out, isn't it?
No, Dr. Omega's out in... where are we now? It's the 1st of September. It's out on the 15th of September.
15th of September. Do beg your pardon.
Yes, that's
so,
right.
So, and you've obviously you've done all the work on that and you've recorded it.
It's all complete, yes. It's apparently it got back from the manufacturers last week and it's all ready to go. So in 2 weeks, yes.
Quite. Are you looking forward to it?
I am, but there's a certain amount of trepidation that goes along with it, because I'll be perfectly honest. When I was approached to do it, it was before Stephen Moffat approached me to do Day of the Doctor. So I was well up for it then. But when I'd done Day of the Doctor, it was right, now what do I do? Because I didn't want to be seen to be cashing in on that. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
But having said that, I'd already read the book, and I'm talking about the original translation.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about the Jean-Marc Lefissier version, the Doctor Who-ized version, as I call it. Which I just don't see the point of, other than cashing in, which is precisely what I'm trying to say. I didn't want to be perceived to be that kind of person, you see. But it's a great story. It really is a good tale. So I wanted to do it some kind of justice. But my real concern was because I thought, right, I've got a situation here that I can't win in. In other words, some people will listen to it and say, that sounds nothing like Hartnell, which, of course, it's not supposed to be Hartnell. But they wanted me to pitch the voice as close to Hartnell as possible. Mm-hmm. But I was quite uncomfortable about that because I thought, well, you know, we might, like, I don't want to tread on anybody's toes. And not only that, it would be difficult to sustain as you know, as a book reading if I was constantly thinking about hitting the right Hartnell notes all the way through it. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to tell the story. That's the important thing, rather than have some bloke trying to sound like Hartnell. That's not the important thing. So, yeah, so I pitched it somewhere in between. In other words, what I did is I thought Hartnell, but let the voice drift.
Right.
So I'm sure some people will say, you see, he can't do Hartnell. It's terrible. So, but I'm prepared. I'm prepared for that. You know, I'm why should I care? What I really care about is, you know, have I told the story well? And that's all that matters. And I think I did okay. So yeah, I'm looking forward to, opinions don't really matter to me. In terms of those kind of opinions, in other words, you know, over analytical opinions don't really matter to me. It's did I do the job right? Does it tell a story? Did it entertain? Did you enjoy it? You know, that's what matters to me, which is why I loved Into the Dalek so much. But yes, I'm looking forward to it.
Good. Will there be a trailer available? I'm looking forward to it, actually. Yeah, I am. I'm quite fascinated by it. I always have been. The very first, here's a story for you. For you all, indeed. And you too, dear listener. The very first person that I interviewed was Jean-Marc Lefissier.
Oh.
For Casterbris, and because that was kind of where my whole sort of writing career began, he's therefore the first person I interviewed, and I didn't really know much about Dr. Omega then. I thought it was made up completely. I thought it was just, you know, like, do you remember Wonderwall, the Mike Flowers Pops version?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Kevin Greening played it on Radio 1 and played it as if it was like the in quotes original version. And that's what I thought Dr. Omega was. I thought it was kind of a pastiche mock original. I didn't realize it was like a real book.
No.
And like a genuine artifact. So I'm very interested in, and I'm kind of, I don't really have time to read as much as I would like to. So I'm moving towards audiobooks for the car and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to listening to you.
Well, the reason I couldn't really wriggle out of making Dr. Omega sound a little like Hartnell, and in places you'll think, oh, it's too much like Hartnell, probably, I don't know. But I couldn't wriggle out of it because in all of the editions of the book, I think two people had a go at the illustrations and both realised the character as a skinny old man who looked remarkably like William Hartnell.
Yeah,
and so that is the selling point of the book, I suppose, the audiobook rather, the fact that the similarities are the selling point. So I couldn't wriggle out of that. So I had to.
Did it take much effort in trying to model your voice on David Bradley?
Yeah, a great deal of effort.
Well, he's a Yorkshireman as well, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah, I think he's from York.
Oh, I don't know. I'd have to look into that. No, I don't know.
I'm going to have to check that.
I like that.
I'm pretty sure I've read that. I'm pretty sure I read that.
I shall check.
I'm doing it for you. Yeah, he's born in York, apparently.
Wow.
It says Wikipedia.
Well, I was born in Wakefield, so not far away from there.
Hey, up.
Yeah, which is also interesting because we've actually anglicised one of the characters. Because, I mean, they're all supposed to be French apart from, I think, apart from Dr. Omega, although it doesn't specify. But, so I anglicised. So basically, I made one of the characters a silly comedy Yorkshireman. Whether that will go down well or not, I don't know. But it was a case of, I think when I got there, I think they realised that it was a case of I do what I want. And so yeah. They just, all right, John, yeah, whatever. So that's the way it went.
Is this first audiobook you've done?
First official one, yes.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. It turned out well, surprisingly well. I think the main problem with it was the translation came out somewhat kind of eccentric, for want of a better word. So there was lots of stopping and starting. I think the sound engineer thought I couldn't read or something, because it was a case of sections were repeated and words were inverted and all kinds of things that they, you know, it was very difficult to read in all honesty. So some of it does sound a little odd, which is what you get with translations. But I tried to build that into it to make that the comedy aspect. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that it sounded, some of the dialogue sounded a little strange. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes down. We'll see.
Okay. Brian Terranova.
Yes.
Are you still with us?
I am. I haven't gone to Missy yet. No.
Okay. I noticed you've been busy of late.
Have you?
Yes. Have you got some events coming up that you want to tell us about?
Yeah, there are a few. All my dates are a little bit askew, so we may have to get them after the fact. But there's number one, there's RetroCon. That's coming up the beginning of September, I think.
Okay, is that the one that the trailer was for?
No, the trailer was the next one. That's J1Con. That
is that the one that the trailer was 14th. For?
Yes. Yes. That one's easy to remember. It's my brother's birthday, so I'm skipping it to go to a convention.
Oh, we'll all remember that as well.
Yeah. That was fun. Actually, the cool thing about that, we just shot that trailer on Saturday.
Right. Okay. That was a quick turnaround.
Yeah, it was a very quick turnaround. Now they were saying they wanted a quick turnaround because they want to get it. They're trying to get it on certain cable channels as well. They want to put it on TV, not just on the internet, to kind of advertise this con. Mm-hmm. The guy who made it, Jason Richardson, he is the guy running the con, J1Con. He just won the Geek of the Year award here, which apparently is very prestigious. I've never heard of it, but apparently everybody in my group was geeking out about it, so I really have to look into it. But it's brought him and the con a lot of attention, which is very cool. So being a part of that is actually very cool as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a fun thing. As a matter of fact, when we went to go do the shoot, we were trying to find this kind of rundown bridge that had just been graffitied over. He had a very kind of specific look in mind that he had wanted. And unfortunately, due to some time restraints, we couldn't actually do that. But on our way, we saw these firemen. They had a truck out. They had an entire unit doing some practice runs and so on out there. So there's these guys all the way up, and I don't know, they must have been like 100 feet up on a crane, I don't know, whatever, and all they're yelling down there, as you saw in the trailer, one of the girls was Sailor Moon, so they're yelling down to us like, hey, Sailor Moon, hello, Sailor Moon, and so all the firemen, like, they stopped their training, they brought all the guys down, they came down to pose for photos with all of us, which I thought was very cool. And then at one point, when we were actually shooting the commercial in that kind of quarry area that we had found, there was a police officer just watching us the entire time. Now, we probably shouldn't have been in there, but he never once did he come out to stop us. Once we were done shooting, he just drove away. So it was a lot of fun. It was a big fun
Good.
Event for us.
Okay. So what are you doing at these events?
Well, I'm doing the 10th Doctor cosplay that I do. At the RetroCon, I'll have my TARDIS. At J1Con, I'm not sure if I'll have it there or not, but basically doing promotion and I'm the hype man with some other people, trying to get people really excited about the events. Some of the conventions I'll do panels, we'll premiere our films for Legacy, but otherwise we're just kind of hanging out with people and helping them have a fun experience at these conventions and just being a part of the fun. So
cool. And I can tell you, dear listener, that if you go to a convention with Brian Terranova, it will be the best convention you ever go to.
Well, thanks, Christian. We'll get that money we talked about later.
Indeed. Okay, it's recommendations time, I think. Unless, shall we talk? Oh, no, we will talk about kissing.
Mm.
We will talk about interspecies lesbianism briefly. Because you may know, dear listener, and I'm sure our my guest and my two co-hosts know all about the fact that six people complained to the BBC, or to Ofcom, big pardon, over the interspecies lesbian kiss. This isn't Star Trek. It's not the 1960s. The interspecies lesbian kiss that occurred in Deep Breath, the first episode of Doctor Who Series 8. And there's been kind of a bit of mocking about the fact that six people complained. However, you know, we need to look at this in a more holistic kind of a way, because the BBC has cut the scene from its Asian package in order to meet local legislation, basically. Here we say, the BBC's Jean Long, she's got a name, hasn't she? Director of Communications at BBC Worldwide said that as an international broadcaster, the BBC had to comply with broadcast regulations of the countries in which its channels were aired. And the scene is missing from the screenings of the episodes in South Korea, Taiwan, Thailand, Indonesia, Malaysia, and Singapore. They all got the censored version. Which is, obviously, this throws up an interesting question. Or a discussion, and it might be one that we don't really have that much time to talk about today. So, does anyone want to say anything about it?
What does it matter?
Well, ultimately, it doesn't matter, I don't think, does it? Does cutting out really change? It doesn't change the dynamic of the relationship between the two characters, and it enables Doctor Who to be screened overseas in regions where it would otherwise be banned. So,
you know, here's the key thing for me. You know, it's being cut out of a country that has very stringent, very strict rules for what their audience can view. You know, the BBC didn't cut it because they said six people complained, we have to take it out. They're complying with what they have to do for that country's regulations and whatever. You know, that's what that country wants to do. The BBC is complying with that. The BBC put it in. They're leaving it in otherwise. And really, I mean, it's not even like, and not that this would matter, but it's not even like it was just these two kissed. It was the one character trying to save the other's life by letting them breathe the same oxygen. If we're talking about the same scene that I'm recalling, otherwise I don't remember a kiss.
Yes, we are, yeah.
Yeah. So it's not even like properly a kiss, but it shouldn't matter, kiss or not. Who the hell cares? That's what the characters are. That's what they do. You know, they're not my favorite characters anyway, but I think it's ridiculous that people are worrying about this sort of thing, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah, I mean, I think the whole point of that scene was simply one person who loves somebody very much saving the life of that person, and that's the end of it. The methodology is irrelevant.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Plus, she is the sexiest lizard I've ever seen. I just wanted to throw that in. Yeah.
That is a fair point.
Yeah.
Well, clearly have not been beguiling many lizards. Oh,
no. Why would I? I think is the really important
yes.
Okay. I
hear that it was also cut from various showing in lizard countries.
Really?
Yeah.
They don't like humans, do they?
In Lizardonia.
Well, the lizards don't like the humans, I hear. Yeah, it's a very difficult relationship.
Very intolerant, that's what it says.
Yeah,
indeed. But, okay,
I suppose there is an argument, though. If we wanted to do a counter, you could argue that was the scene definitively about them saving each other, or was there a sexual element there? Was there an intended slight amount of odd titillation, or perhaps even defiance of culture,
when there are two attractive women kissing each other?
That's what I mean. How honest is the scene? I mean, if it had been two fat blokes in there who needed to share air, would they have done it the same way?
That's next week, apparently.
Is that the name of the episode? The two fat blokes who need to share air?
Oh, Robot Sherwood. Yeah. Is next week.
Fat Blokes of Sherwood. Yeah, it's called Fat Blokes of Sherwood.
That'd be a good name.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so as well.
Good name for a band, that.
Yeah.
Okay, it's recommendations time. To hell with your anarchy.
That time.
Yes. Okay, who wants to go first with a recommendation this week?
I'll
step up. James, get the heck out. You go. James is stepping up. Wait, he's
I was just
going to
say.
My heart is all aflutter.
My recommendation isn't actually a recommendation. It's actually a de-recommendation.
Okay.
And an apology. My apology is that I recommended last week that people try the Ripple Effect 99p Kindle story starring the Seventh Doctor. And I'd like to de-recommend that retrospectively and apologize. The Ripple Effect deals with the Doctor landing on a planet where there are a load of good Daleks. And he doesn't believe there is such a thing as a good Dalek. And his companion is there to try and force him to accept the fact that Daleks could be good, which is just unholy a bad time to recommend a novel like that when a week later on comes a television story about a good Dalek, where the companion has to spend the majority of the episode trying to convince the Doctor that there is such a thing as a good Dalek. So, yes, I am sorry if anyone did read that in advance, because it probably did marginalize the impact of Phil Ford's.
Well, you know, there's an article ambitious in this because tale. There is a lot of good Daleks. There's good Daleks in Dark Eyes, isn't there, Brian?
Good Daleks, and I don't remember good Daleks in Dark Eyes.
Yes,
that's terrible.
Is,
I was going to say
yes when they
good...
when the Doctor. I'm sure it's Dark Eyes. It must be Dark Eyes. When they land on, they go to. Oh, was it Dark Eyes? There's a section where he thinks he's in a city and there's good Daleks.
Oh, yeah, but that was a dream sequence.
That was a dream sequence. Whoops, yes, I know.
Not to ruin that. Yes, you're right. Yeah. There's that, but there's also the Doctor Who magazine comic strip. I don't remember which one it was, where the Eighth Doctor runs into the Daleks that the
Children
Second
of the
Doctor
Revolution,
had programmed. There you are. Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, so the Eighth Doctor has at least met some kind of in a way twice then.
Yeah.
At least twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think we need to collate these on Casterbris and have a good old chat about them. Okay, so you have a de-recommendation. Do you have an actual recommendation, or is that just a pop-out?
No.
Okay. Okay. John, would you like to recommend anything that you might be involved in that's coming out on the 15th of September?
That's a good idea, isn't it? Because I was struggling. But I would like to recommend Into the Dalek. No, seriously, for people who don't... Why won't watch it? I refuse to watch this shit now. You know, because there are people out there. And
why, why are they listening to this then?
Exactly. Precisely my point. Absolutely well made. Why do they bother? Why do they stay involved?
Crazy.
Fuck off, you know. You know, put quite simply, what did that episode do? It engaged. It was very well paced. It was very well acted. It was very well directed, in my opinion. And it pleased a lot of people. You know, it actually made me want to go and read a 1970s Target novel immediately afterwards, which I did. And so, you know, it made me feel like a child again. It did its job. It absolutely did its job.
There's a lot of people actually saying that. There's a lot of classic fans blight their hides because they are very defined and territorial, who are stamping their flags saying Doctor Who has finally returned home. This is like the classic show. It's back.
I can well imagine. Yeah. I'm one of them. I am. I'm sorry.
No, you're not, because you're a little more objective. You're an objective viewer. You're not just a classic. I mean, these are people who've loathed the new series and been each series going, you know, Moffat's going to bring back the original series. I'm looking forward to 25-minute episodes.
I think it's because I feel sorry for a lot of people. I feel sorry for a lot of people because they're actually missing Doctor Who. It's actually back on our screens. It's been back since 2005, and all they've been doing is taking it to pieces. I do feel very strongly about it because Doctor Who was never that high art thing that people are suggesting that it should be. Never was. And I just really do think that if the internet had been around in 1963, I'm fairly certain you'd have had no Doctor Who in 65. I mean, you know, I mean, I've seen concerns such as, I mean, my favourite one, I'm sorry to go off on one for a moment. Maybe I'll get taken to heaven or hell in a second, you never know. But my favourite one was, I saw somebody complaining about, ooh, Michael Smiley's character said that we don't take any prisoners, but yet the Dalek is a prisoner. And this was a major concern for one person. And then it became a concern for many others. And I saw this concern spread across the internet like a disease. And then I thought to myself, well, the phrase, we don't take prisoners, is a kind of soldier's threat, isn't it? It's not necessarily to be taken literally. I mean, it was some bluster to put the Doctor in his place. I mean, he even follows it up by saying they're going to kill him, doesn't he?
Yeah, but he does actually say, because he could be a duplicate. Now, I think they'd be fairly pretty sure that the Dalek wasn't a disguised person who was going to suddenly appear to be a Dalek or a duplicate. It was a Dalek. So there was no need to take...
But my point is, it's irrelevant. My point is,
yes, yeah,
it really doesn't matter. I mean, maybe Mr. Smiley was being ironic. Maybe his definition of a prisoner is the issue here. Maybe he meant we don't take prisoners anymore. Either way, it's a totally irrelevant sticking point.
Well, he was saying numerous justifications can be offered. Because they could be Dalek agents. But a Dalek is a Dalek, so... Mm. Do you know what I mean? So in a sense, what he was saying did still make sense if we were going to still argue against that classic person.
It did, but the point I was trying to make was that people are creating silly issues and putting that in the way of actually enjoying this program, which is actually, you know, it is still the best thing on television. And what we don't want to lose sight of is whenever you hear Russell T. Davies speak about how it got back on air, you know, it was a miracle that it came back. So let's keep it that way. Let's, you know, I think that my real concern with such criticism is the way it's delivered, if I'm honest. You know, I think that it's delivered by people, you know, they talk about it as if they own the program, as if they own the people making it. And the mark is overstepped a lot in Doctor Who fandom, and people get very personal and very cruel about individuals, and that's just not on, you know. I mean, as the Doctor himself said on Saturday, he's like, no, not like that, not like that. No, get it right. So what he means is meaning nicely and in a civil manner. Like you chaps, you know, if you've got, it's a case of, you know, you can express your concerns, but in a civil manner without getting, I think, well, that's my major concern with, it just gets my goat that people aren't embracing it.
I think it annoys me that people are proud not to embrace it. Well, I mean, like on Saturday, I was really annoyed because I felt I'd lost out. Everyone else I'd spoken to really enjoyed it, and I didn't. And I hated that because I wanted to be the one who enjoyed it. Who wants to be the one on the byline saying, this is crap, I wish it was... I don't know, by the way, I didn't think it was crap. I have a lot of issues with it, but overall, I thought it was still well put together. But why would you want to be? It doesn't serve you. You don't enjoy being like that. So why try? And I'm still convinced if you took that episode even if you took an episode which people don't particularly like and you shoved it into another era, I'm sure that it would be classified, especially in the classic show where there wasn't much character depth, there wasn't that much action, it'd be heralded as a great John Pertwee story. I'm sure of it on most of the new series. Okay. Because they are well-written stories, they're character stories, they're given the ability and the money to write stories which they weren't able to in the 70s. So,
Okay. Brian, recommendations.
I have two this week. One of them is Doctor Who related. Well, one of them is actually, they're both Doctor Who related. Awesome. There we go. The first one is one of the most recent Sixth Doctor Big Finish plays called Breaking Bubbles and Other Stories. And generally, when they have a title called And Other Stories, it's a two CD release or two, whatever, download release that is four individual episodes. Four individual stories. It's, you know, for a little while now with Big Finish, aside from something like Dark Eyes and some of the Seventh Doctor plays, I haven't really been that into them. I don't know what's changed, but something's changed. I just haven't been that into them. But with this story, it's the Sixth Doctor and Perry. I really enjoyed all four stories. It was nice. And I think it was nice that they were four individual stories, because for some reason it felt like there was more there to enjoy than just the usual one singular release for a Doctor. So, again, it's called Breaking Bubbles and Other Stories. And for being essentially 24 minutes worth of one story, they did really well with all of it. There's one of them that has a great start. And it's the Chaos of Time. And basically the Doctor starts the adventure pretty much in the middle of it already without any clue of how he got there. And that is kind of the crux of the whole story. And he keeps kind of flittering back and forth. And I think I spoke about this many times on the podcast. I love those kind of time-bending stories. So he kind of keeps flipping back and forth to different points and kind of picking up the pieces of how his day actually began. And I just think it was a really, really fun time. So, yeah, all four of them are worth it. That one in particular I really enjoyed.
Okay, cool.
Outside of that, I have to say that our old former Casterbrite, Anthony Dry, turned me on to The Return of the Saint.
Good lad.
Yeah, with Ian Ogilvy, is that how you say Ogilvy? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm like five episodes in now, six episodes in. It's really enjoyable.
It is good,
I like it. I'm a huge fan of The Saint. I'm a huge fan of Roger Moore, so I thought I was going to have some more issues, and I'm not. I mean, it's different, clearly it's different, but I think that's part of the joy and the charm of it. So yeah, it's a good series so far.
Yeah, popular Doctor Who illustrator Anthony Dry gave me his non-digitally remastered DVD collection of Return of the Saint.
Nice.
It's a great theme tune as well.
Yeah, it has got a superb theme tune.
And I also like how they do the opening. I like the fact that I know Christian had spoke about this I forget the name of the person you did the interview with, Christian. You have to forgive me, but when you were asking...
Oh, yeah, that was Ian Dickerson, yeah.
Thank you, yes. if the Halo was going to be used in the new series or the, the new, which I think there's really cool ways you can do that, in my opinion. I think even if you do something like where there's an angel statue and Simon just stands in front of it and the Halo's hanging over his head, like if you find a way with every episode to just somehow do something that just happens to be over his head that emulates it in some way, even if you don't draw attention to it, if you just have it as a nod, I think that'd be cool. But I like the way in the intro here that the Halo kind of always starts the intro. It made it kind of interesting thing. But like I said, 5-6 episodes in, there's been lots of Doctor Who actors in there. One of the most recent ones and one of the episodes I saw was Maurice Colburn, who played Lytton in the Peter Davison and Colin Baker era. So it's fun to see those familiar faces for me. I like that sort of thing. Plus, I like this era of TV. So, yeah.
Maurice Colburn's fantastic. Brian, have you ever seen Gangsters?
I have not.
Yeah, if you like Maurice, you should look at Gangsters. In fact, there's a recommendation, which originally came from Elton Town and Jones, who writes with you, doesn't he,
Chris? He does from time to time. Well, Gareth Cavanagh would also suggest Gangsters.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's my recommendation. Gangsters, written by Philip Martin.
Philip Martin, yeah, exactly, yeah.
And starring Maurice Colburn. Wonderful.
Oh, cool.
Amazing. Amazing.
It's been a bit of a podcast for Phillips because we obviously had Phil Ford as well. So the slamming Phillips.
Yeah, the wet Phillips. you see, I'm allowed to say that because my middle name is Philip, you see. So I can get away by saying it's a wet name. You see what I mean? You see how I get away with that and discharge it.
Okay. Right. I think that takes us to my recommendation.
Yeah.
Now, and we will wrap up shortly. Okay. I have an unrecommendation. I stumbled into it's an okay recommendation. It's a B movie, right? I stumbled into it the other evening. It's called Lockdown. It stars Guy Pearce. Now, I really like Guy Pearce. He's made some great films. LA Confidential. He's excellent in Iron Man 3. This film, Lockdown, was okay, it's kind of a Die Hard in space sort of thing, but the CGI was horrendous. People were criticizing Deep Breath last week. This is a Hollywood movie, and the CGI of the exterior of the space station and the space shuttle craft was really, really poor.
It's because it was CGI.
Well, it exactly was CGI.
I don't like CGI.
Yeah. Well, no.
I think they should have gone into space models, and filmed a real spaceship. That's what they should have done. And I'm fucking sick of this kind of shit going on. I really am. CGI, things looking not quite surreal as they should do. They should actually make the damn thing, go into space and bloody well film it.
Well, you're absolutely right, John, to a point. Yeah. And I think if you were making a movie, then you've got to go for models first, haven't you? I think we've got plenty of films prior to now to show that like models is the place to be. Yep. If when you want to see CGI for your explosions and stuff like that, all very well, or your lasers and everything. If you can't achieve it with models, then go to the CGI.
Yeah.
So for a Hollywood movie, that was quite disappointing. And a bit of a hokey plot, but Guy Pearce is okay in it. And that's kind of, I just wanted to say that because I like Guy Pearce, and I was a bit disappointed with that. I've been playing a lot of Civilization 5 in the last week as well. That's nothing to do with Doctor Who, I just want to say. So I don't really have a proper Doctor Who recommendation other than the same one I had last week, which I think was The Invasion.
So who's been complaining about CGI in which episode? What, Deep
Breath? What's his name? What's his bloody
name? Yeah, I wonder, right, isn't
it? Yeah, the dinosaur and the London, the Victorian London skyline were considered by some.
It was really very good.
Don't know. What,
as far as CGI goes.
So anyway,
you know what? Here's the thing. I've always said CGI is great for things like skylines and cities and buildings and spaceships like
that. And dinosaurs.
But not living creatures. I've always had issues with CGI for living creatures. Now, granted, there have been some that have really
dinosaurs
impressed.
Aren't living creatures. They're all dead.
You make a good point. I'll shut up.
Next week.
Do you think Doctor Who fans can do this, though? Do you think they have the right to criticise CGI with a legacy of string, polystyrene?
Yes, I do. I think they do, because when Doctor Who did, I mean, you only have to look at that awful, in many ways, Doctor Who serial from 1977, Underworld.
Yeah.
Which is also one of my favourites because of the technical side of it. And I think the Doctor Who pioneered a lot. And I think what you're doing there is looking back with a tongue in your cheek and maybe sort of like teasing a little bit, saying that Doctor Who special effects were crap in the 70s, and they weren't really. They were state in the majority of them. They were state of the art.
I think if you go back and have a look at some of the actual articles at the time, you'll see a lot of people who don't agree with you there.
I think they were pushing the boundaries. I would like to know what they were expecting other than taking a camera crew with a real space-time machine into space, frankly. Next week, Robot of Sherwood, we will be discussing. I would like to thank John Giler for taking the time out of his busy Dr. Omega reading schedule to join us. And thank you, dear listener, for listening. Until next time, goodbye.